Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today. Joining us, our old friends, Fred Breglia and Greg Ward. Fred is director of horticulture. Actually, he's director of the whole darn thing, the director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. We welcome your calls right now at 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also tweet us at WAMCVoxPop. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/WAMCRadio. We'll have a Vox Pop post there. You can go to our website, WAMC.org/VoxPop, and comment there, or email us, VoxPop@WAMC.org. But we sure do love your calls, 1-800-348-2551. Greg, Fred, nice to have you guys back on a beautiful day.
It's great to be back, Greg.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having us.
It really feels like it's gardening weather now, yes?
It certainly does now. We've made up some ground, I think, from some of that cold, and we're here. It feels really good outside
today.
It's
been kind of a chilly spring.
It has been cool.
But things are picking up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think it's actually been a very nice spring.
Yeah, real spring.
A real spring. We were a little worried that winter wouldn't end and then it would suddenly be summer, and that was not the case. It's been just right.
And that's good for the plants?
That's great for the plants. Yeah, a lot of times we'll go from that really, really cold, nothing, then summer, hot, everything's kind of stressing, and this is enabling a lot of that water that we're getting to get down in the root zone and acclimate those plants for the upcoming season.
Yeah, and that just reminds me that there are some plants that wake up late, some woody plants, some perennial plants that just don't emerge until the soil temperatures are really warm.
Yeah.
And so because we're a little delayed, just keep that in mind. It may still, if you're looking at something and it's not awake yet, it's not growing yet, it may just need a little more time.
Okay, so patience. Let's go to Joan in Longmeadow. Joan, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon. I'm so glad I can have a chance to ask you this question. I last year planted 3 dwarf mugo pines, and they're sort of clustered together. They were, placed together. One of them, in a matter of days, died. Needles turned completely brown. I took it, dug it up, and best guess was it was pine wilt. So I transplanted the other two to a wholly different part of the yard. And this spring, one of the remaining two is noticeably paler. I sprayed it with an iron solution, but now it has stayed pale, and the pine needles are browning. And I'm wondering if there's anything I can do to save this one, or if not, is the other one probably already infected?
Mm. I'm not so sure about pine wilt and wood. Might defer to Fred for that one. But if you planted them last year and they died, the first one died immediately. There's obviously some kind of stress. It could be fungal, but it also could just be transplant related. And then the one this year, if it's not breaking bud, if it's not expanding that little candle on top and forming new needles, and the other one is, then yeah, that's and it's discoloring as you described. Then that's probably not a good sign.
Yeah, were they just curious? Were they bald and burlapped, or were they containerized plants?
They were containers.
They were containerized, and yes. The root system looked good on them when you.
Yeah, they were very vigorous. The death of the first one last year came towards the end of the summer, and I planted them in spring.
All right, okay. So it made it all through the growing season looking pretty good, and then it kind of happened fast.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
A couple days.
Does sound more fungal related. I mean, as long as you, properly planted them, watered them in through the drought periods and things like that. But if you did all of those steps, then it would probably be more fungal related. You should see some spots on a needle. And a spot on a needle is usually a little band of either discolored black, dark brown, sometimes even red. And it looks sort of like a lesion.
Okay.
So a lot of times a hand lens is necessary to really get a good look at them. And then within that lesion, you often will see little tiny black dots. Those are often fungal spores. Look for some of those signs.
Can you get rid of it?
If you're seeing a yellowed plant, that's not good. Pale now, this time of year, it should be showing some candle elongation.
Yeah.
It should have a good color to it. And fungicides with that are often more preventative than they are, or early stages of it. But once you get into the more advanced stages, it's tough to bring them back around.
Yeah, stress related issues are usually what bring about that kind of decline. So getting back to, you know, were they too wet? Were they too dry? Were they too shady? Those are sort of the three things that would affect the pine. Back last fall or the location they are now, and just keep that in mind as you go forward.
And making sure that they're planted at the proper depth as well. I always can't emphasize that enough, that the top of their root ball is at ground level or slightly higher, but never any deeper, because that will cause decline, cause additional stress, making them more prone to insect and disease attacks.
Okay.
So may I just ask, best strategy, get rid of the dying one?
Get rid of the dying one.
Yep.
Move the other.
And if the live one is expanding, its needles are expanding, and as Fred said, you know it's not too deep, the crown is there,
yeah.
then allow that one to grow out if you need
to. Stay
where
it is.
Yeah, if you need to move it, wait until it's finished expanding.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, moving
it
now could hurt it more because it's actively growing right now.
Joan, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yep, good luck.
Let's go to Stephanie in Kingston. Hi, Stephanie, you're on The Gardening Show.
Hi, I'm so glad to get through you guys. I have, a few years ago, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, my grandfather gave me a Brugmansia tree. But since I've had it, it will not flower. It has at least three Ys, where the trunk has split into a Y, but
yep.
It still hasn't flowered. I repotted it this year and fertilized it. But I was wondering if there are any tips on how to get it to flower.
When you fertilized it, do you know what you used for a fertilizer?
It was just a Scotts, just an all-around garden and plant fertilizer.
Okay. And does it look really green? The leaves look really green, lush?
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful. They're healthy. It's losing them and growing them all the time and growing taller. I cut it back this year. It got so tall.
Okay, because a lot of times plants like that, Brugmansia, as I know, need definitely fair amount of phosphorus, potassium. So
mm-hmm.
I would say potentially the fertilizer or the type of fertilizer. And if this is the first year you fertilize it, then that might be a factor too. But if it's really lush and green, it sounds like it's getting plenty of nitrogen. And too much nitrogen sometimes can actually cause more foliage, but very lack of flower buds. So whatever you're using, you want to make sure that it's what we call a complete fertilizer. Meaning it has the NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, and it also has all the little trace elements that the plants need in very small quantities. So you're looking for a complete fertilizer with micronutrients and something that is more balanced or even a little heavier in the phosphorus and potassium category, a little lower on the nitrogen would probably be a good place to start, especially if you're looking at a really healthy plant. Now, Greg may have something to add to that.
I would just say that it sounds like what you just did by transplanting it and fertilizing it, that may have been the issue. I have found that if you leave them in the same pot from the previous year and don't fertilize them well or don't put them into a larger pot so they can re-root, that yes, they will have a hard time flowering. They will have a hard time just expanding at all. So if you've done that and the fertilizer you used sounds like it may be a timed release fertilizer, but if it's not, just keep that in mind that you'll want to continue to fertilize them later on in the season. And then now that it's out and leafy and lush, just no significant pruning because it is going to bloom on that end, on those end growths where you might feel like pruning. And I think it's well on its way. It's been outside a little bit now.
Yeah, I take it in most nights because it's still pretty chilly.
Yep.
But yeah, other than that, it's getting some good sun and some good heat.
Yep. So I would say I'm going to make a prediction: July 15th.
Oh, good.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, Stephanie.
Yeah, great. Could I ask one more question?
Okay.
A friend of mine has what she calls a trumpet vine. I'm not sure exactly what she means, but it's planted outside.
Yeah, we know what that is. Yep.
Yeah, and she hasn't got that to flower in a few years.
All right.
Same kind of thing. Fertilize it.
Yeah, I would say same kind of thing. A lot of times, I don't know the history here, but if people put down lawn fertilizer is very high in nitrogen, and if you're in the same area where your plants are, like your shrubs and your trees, the root systems of the lawn and the shrubs and the trees all coexist. So if you do to your lawn any tree or shrub in that proximate area is also getting that same fertilizer. And it might be the same kind of thing where it's getting a lot of nitrogen. Maybe they're fertilizing their lawn and it's really leafy, but you're not getting a lot of good flower bud initiation, which would be more phosphorus potassium type of elements that it needs. So start there. Of course, it likes more sun than shade. And so if it's not getting enough sun, that would also do it. I mean, lilacs in the shade, it doesn't matter if you're giving it all the nitrogen in the world, you're not going to get great blooms. Same thing with the trumpet vines.
Yeah, okay. I will go with that. I mean, I think they do tend to not bloom right away. They do tend to, so if it's a new plant, it's just been in the ground for a year or two, you will have to wait a few years to see blooms. But if she's seen them in the past, if she's been doing any severe pruning, she may want to hold back on that, just cutting back that lighter, skinny previous year's growth, and that's all you want to do.
Okay.
Thanks,
all right,
Stephanie.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You got it.
Appreciate the call. And let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Vox Pop, The Gardening Show. More of your questions and some answers, hopefully, on the way.
Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts, offering annuals, perennials, vegetables, trees, and shrubs, indoor and outdoor plants, and garden and landscape information. HadleyGardenCenter.com. SPAC, presenting Martha Graham Dance Company with Appalachian Spring, The Rite of Spring, and Echo, June 12th. SPAC.org for tickets. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Boyden and Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. And the Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, celebrating 30 years of educating children and striving to inspire a lifelong love of learning. WaldorfSaratoga.org.
Newsflash, people of Earth, the fun drive starts Monday morning at 6 a.m. 6 a.m., the WAMC fun drive starts now. If you want to do your part and shorten the fun drive, get back to regular programming, I encourage you to go to WAMC.org and check out the lockbox. You can feed the lockbox, metaphorically speaking, and what you do is you put a little something in. Everything that goes in the lockbox now counts on minute one of the fun drive, and we're nearly $300,000 in there right now. So if we hit the 325 mark, an anonymous donor, we know who he is. He's from Connecticut. We call him Mr. Big. If we hit 325, he will throw in another $25,000, which means we would start the drive on Monday morning with $350,000. And that ain't hay. So if you want to make a pledge now, there's some cool stuff you can get, including a personalized WAMC mug. Get your name on it or get a funny phrase on it. I was looking at some of the phrases that are on there. Frankly, I'm amazed we're printing them. But still, go check it out and make your pledge and feed the lockbox, and we'll see you on Monday morning. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. And before we get back to the phones, our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, very concerned, gentlemen. Very concerned, Jessica.
Wow. Yes, I am very concerned. So just first an update about my question that they asked you last month about the lawn and the grass. It's growing beautifully.
Oh,
your
good.
Recommendations
Wonderful.
Were very helpful. Thank you so much. But a new problem has arisen, literally arisen,
right.
since last month. And so I'm very new to gardening, as I've not been shy about saying. So these flowers came up in our yard, sort of, I think someone who lived there before had planted them. So I was like, hey, I don't have to do any work. I have flowers in my yard already. And they came up and they're these pretty little flowers with these little white flowers on them and like leafy and whatever. And I was like, oh, this is so great. And then someone was like, oh, those are lilies of the valley.
Okay.
Is that
yeah.
accurate?
Yep, yep.
And they're beautiful.
They are really nice.
But I have a 15-month-old daughter who likes to run around the yard and pick things. And I understand they're quite poisonous if ingested. And while this might make me sound like a pretty neurotic mother, I'd like to get rid of them.
Just like a mother, so, not a neurotic mother.
Yes. So I have a twofold question. One is, what's the best way to get rid of them? I hear they're quite prolific.
They certainly can be.
Yeah. Digging them up is the best way. And I bet you have some neighbors who would take them.
Yeah. You could easily give those away.
Are they poisonous?
I have read a little bit about that. I don't know specifically what the toxin is in there, but I don't think it's anything too serious. There's, and just from my point of view, there's been a lot of kids running around on a lot of Lily of the Valley over the years, and it's all worked out.
What do you think, Fred?
You know, I tend to agree with Greg. You know, a lot of times, you could really go around your house and you could find all kinds of things that if you ate them in the right quantities.
True. The couch, that's really one.
Any sort of fungal situation, mushrooms, those, you know, small, tiny amount could really get you, and you can't stop those guys from coming up.
And there are a few plants that have...
Nightshade family plants are really quite bad, and because a very small amount of those could wreak havoc pretty quickly. But you have something that, A, compared to some of the things that we deal with invasives, Lily of the Valley is not hard to get rid of. Digging it, like Greg said, would definitely be the best way to go. Mm. And this one, you very well might find people to dig it for you. Yeah. Oh, you want some Lily of the Valley?
You would.
Come on in. You'd find people to dig that for free.
Or maybe you make a few bucks on the
maybe
whole thing.
I was gonna
say start
that.
A little nursery.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great
you might
tip,
even make
guys.
A few bucks on
well,
that.
All right, Jessica Blasty.
Well, actually,
Marshall.
I have a second part of the question.
Okay.
Very quickly.
Okay.
Yes, I know I'm neurotic, but I do want to get rid of them. What would you recommend planting in its place? Something non-poisonous that I don't have to worry about.
Well, it depends on what the area is. I mean, it's sort of, are you looking for more ground covery? Are you looking for more annuals? You got a lot of options. So I always tell people when they start to think about plants, think about the role that plant's going to play first. It's sort of like if you were going to get a dog, what's my lifestyle? If it's sitting around watching TV and you're elderly, probably a yellow lab puppy is not the best option for you. Mm-hmm. But if you're an active lifestyle and you take a dog running, that kind of dog works well. So see what kind of role you want that plant to play. Do you want it to be tall? Do you want it to be wide? Do you want it to be carefree? Do you want it to have flowers? When you figure out that role, then we could easily tell you 5 million suggestions that would fit it.
And then Lily of the Valley, if you're just trying to replace that sort of theme, is a low maintenance ground cover that spreads nicely, fills in pretty well, and tends to have good foliage after this lovely flower scent that's having right now, right until the end of August. So what immediately came to me were hosta, but I do have to ask, do you live in the countryside?
No, I live in the city.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So you're all set with, because deer will sometimes eat hosta.
Yep.
So a nice small edging hosta would work out really well. There's a couple of other kind of fun ground covers. One of them's actually native. It's called Canadian or American ginger, and it's a little leafy, round leafy ground cover. No flower, but holds up quite nicely all summer long. And it has a relative called European ginger that has a slightly different leaf, a little more reflective. Two plants that you could put in, and after you've taken out the Lily of the Valley, and they would spread and fill in the same space.
Mm.
Great.
Okay. Or poison ivy. I mean, that would be nice as well.
It's pretty
reddish
to look at.
It is, and the kids won't mind.
Well, thank you so much.
And
well,
you could also think about another thing that comes to mind with a child is something fun that flowers like nasturtium, which is a really cool little plant, and then you could actually eat the flowers and put them in salads. And might be quite neat, too, but we don't want to give the bad example of it's okay, because so maybe not.
Maybe when the child is a little bit
maybe
older.
A little bit older.
Well, Jessica Blasty and Marshall, thank you for being here.
Thanks, guys.
Back to the phones we go. Lynn in Shelburne Falls. Lynn, you're up.
Hey. Hi, Ray, Fred, Greg.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for taking my call. I got actually two questions. The first one is about my poppies. Every year they get hammered down. The poppies still bloom, but the foliage gets down to the ground. It gets rotty. Can I cut that rotty stuff off?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
It sounds like they're a little congested, possibly. It may be time to do some moving around and dividing a little bit of those. That should not happen until August, September, but you might want to keep that in mind for the end of the summer.
Yeah, but getting that off would be beneficial. It's good to get stuff out. Yep.
Good. I'm not sure how to transplant poppies. I've heard that we're very sensitive.
They are sensitive.
Yeah, you just have to be aware, but it's not difficult. They have a fairly significant root that you want to take up. You don't want to snap that off. And again, if you do that when they're reemerging in the late summer, that gives them time to settle in for the fall and winter, and then you're all set for spring.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, very good. I'm not sure you can answer this one. I've got some squirrels around here. I feed birds But these squirrels, one or two of them, I guess, have gotten a taste for magnolia blooms, and over the winter. And, you know, this year my magnolia had a lot of blooms, apparently, but they ate them all off. Hmm. Is there anything I do to actually prevent that besides, you know, putting netting over a huge tree?
Yeah, you know, dried cow blood actually has been proven to deter squirrels. So you can
cow blood or blood meal?
Blood meal.
It's blood meal, yeah. Which is basically derived from a lot of like.
So where do you put it?
Tree. Well, I'll let Greg talk about that exactly. Unless you don't want
no.
to, which I will.
No. Well, I have not specifically heard about a way to apply it to magnolia,
so, okay.
because it's typically being applied as a ground application that will then deter things from coming.
It's more like a barrier.
Yeah. So getting it. What I was going to say, though, is the same kind of thing, is some kind of repellent, and there are some squirrel-oriented ones that you would apply to the plant itself, to those buds, you know, starting.
They won't hurt the birds?
No, they won't hurt the buds. These are things you're just going to spritz on the—I would just spritz it on the flower buds, especially if you can reach them all, and do that starting in September, October, when the leaves are starting to drop off, and— Every time you think of it, you know, once a month or every when it's warm enough, go out and do it again until spring, just to keep them there. The only other thing I've heard about are some kind of, you know, barriers. People have built, if it's convenient for this particular tree, built a sort of a squirrel baffle for the tree. I've heard of this now for fruit trees. I think someone even called in one time and had an example of that. But keeping the squirrels from getting to the flowers is the important thing.
Yeah, and I've had a few people also tell me that with some of these deer be gone kind of recipes, homemade remedies of rotten eggs and a little bit of capsicum pepper, that kind of stuff sprayed on doesn't hurt the plant at all. And I've had people tell me that they've had pretty good luck deterring other mammals with it as well. So probably the bud of the magnolia is not going to taste as good with some rotten eggs and some hot pepper spray.
Yeah, it's not as popular now, but there is a product that has been used to mix into your sunflower seed that is basically the capsin, the pepper, you know, hot molecule.
Really?
There.
So if you throw it on the ground, they eat it?
And birds are not affected by it, and mammals are. So I think if you leaned toward that as your repellent, I think you might be in luck.
Lynn, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. Fred Bregley is here, and Greg Ward, and Martha in Gansevoort. Martha, you're on.
Hi. I have two questions, but before I get to them, I have been picking some marvelous greens, dandelions, garlic, mustard, violet leaves, and then my own chives and parsley for salads every day. And, of course, I don't have any sprays in the yard, so they're good. But, hello?
Yes. Could you possibly use your handset and not your speakerphone, Martha?
Oh, yes.
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. The dandelions, garlic, mustard, violet leaves, chives, and parsley makes a marvelous salad, daily salad that you can just pick. But I got some ever-bearing strawberries last year, and they didn't do well until about October and November, and I figured that probably the birds, I'd find strawberries with a little part pecked out, and so I figured that maybe the birds had gone south, and that's why I was finally getting some. But I got some white rolls of screening at the Home Depot, and I'm wondering if I put them over the strawberries. They are for putting over plants, but I'm wondering about fruit trees. But I'm wondering if I covered the strawberries, would the bees would they need to get in to pollinate the strawberry leaves?
Yes.
Now that what?
Yes.
So would that keep them, do you think, from getting in there?
Well, yes. I mean, that is also the point. So, but still, I would recommend it. I think it's a good way to go. And you just need to go out there and lift it for a few hours, you know, every day or two or three.
Right. Yep. Okay.
There's also
one.
I was going to say, there's also another thing called that my wife and I have used for a lot of success with our strawberry patches, which is called Tanglefoot. There might be other names for it. It basically is a really thin sort of webbing. It's made out of some kind of polymer, which is actually quite strong, and it's almost invisible. So when birds and stuff get to it, they don't get caught, but they don't like the feel of it on their feet. Squirrels and things don't like it either, so it keeps most critters out, but it does not stop insects.
Yeah, and, well, I'll have to look into that because I did put some wider black netting over my blueberry plants last year, but you have to check for birds. I had a hummingbird that got caught in it, but I got it out in time. But I've noticed occasionally that a bird will get caught in it, so you have to check daily. And one other question, I have moss down where I'm putting some squash and cucumber plants, and I'm wondering, does that mean the soil is acidic and that they won't do well?
In the Berkshires, it doesn't mean it's acidic because there are mosses that grow quite nicely in high pH soils. It probably, to me, it means that the soil is not high in organic matter or nutrient ability, and that working in a lot of organic matter, assuming this is a sunny location, is what it's telling me, that you want to beef up the soil.
Okay.
Well, I also have some butternut and walnut trees in the vicinity.
Well, black walnut trees certainly can do some, release some toxins into the environment for taking out certain species. Now, would it be the main factor of whether your plants are growing? I'm not 100% sure on that. But, I would say start with a pH test. If you don't know what your pH is, let's rule that out. That's really cheap. If you're in the New York area, Cornell Cooperative Extension, they do it really cheap. But you could do it yourself. Most garden centers probably take care of soil tests. So you should definitely go with an accurate pH test first. That would be before you do anything, let's rule that out.
Martha, thank you very much. 1-800-348-2551. Linda in Hudson. Linda.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question about a live Christmas tree that I transplanted about a month ago. Very healthy, happy inside, and it started budding and, put out the sort of new growth a couple of inches long. And I think I've transplanted it really well, but all those sort of candles of new growth, almost all of them have turned brown.
Yeah.
Do I take them off?
Yeah, they're probably so you moved it outside a month ago.
Well, I moved it outside a little earlier, but I didn't put it in the ground
until about
a month ago.
And it was already starting to grow when you moved it outside.
Yes.
So what probably happened was the cold weather affected the new growth, and that was killed. You will take that off. Hopefully, though, the plant is vigorous enough that it will do it all over again. And if you are looking at this plant and the original needles or the needles just below that new brown growth are green and looking.
Yeah, the rest of it seems to look fine.
Yeah.
That's a good sign.
It should grow. It should bud again is that's what you need it to do. You need it to put out new growth a second time.
So do I cut those off or just snap them off or what do I do?
Yeah, whatever is convenient, probably cutting them with a little pair of pruners or sharp scissors would be what I'd recommend.
Okay, great. Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Okay. I have a friend who just moved planted some fairly large hornbeams last fall, and they're beautiful trees, and they've... I wonder if this is what you're referring to about starting late, because they've started to leaf out from the bottom, but the tops are still brown.
When we are mostly talking about late leaf out, we're really talking about probably more the entire crown of the tree.
Okay.
And the fact that the top is really brown and the bottom is starting to get quite green, that may be related to that, but it may also not be. It depends on what the winter temperatures sort of did to the top. That's another option. Sometimes the winter temperatures could knock off part of your plant. So winter injury this year, I've seen it on all kinds of things. And it was a fairly tough winter, so a lot of things did get hit. It might be related to that. It might also be something to do with the root system as well, because there's a lot of factors here when you see a top decline. But it almost always indicates if it is cold related, then that's separate. But otherwise, it's probably more root related.
It was a really tricky winter. There were a lot of things that we would never have thought would have had a hard time that had a hard time. Several things that we thought would have a hard time, and many of them in certain situations did perfectly fine. So it was quite unusual. If the trees were bald and burlapped in the fall, dug in October, and then replanted in October. You know, that is a little stressful for Carpinus. They're sort of a spring dig only kind of tree. If they were in containers or they had been dug in the spring and then just moved into the ground in the fall, then I would have thought they would have all pushed out. I would still say that it's a tad early to tell, but if you get your binoculars out if these things are tall, or get on a ladder and just look at the top and see if there's anything green there, scratch the wood, see if there's anything green, I would certainly wait a little longer if you see green.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by wait a little longer?
If you scratch the wood and you see a little bit of green, that means that the branches are still alive and they have potential to push out some new foliage. If it's scratched and it's brown, then it's dead, in which case it's not coming back, and then your option is to cut that back to the point of which the live growth is. If that's so far down and it wouldn't make a good-looking tree, then probably not going to make it. So if you can get up to that top and you can get to the part where it's not leafed out, scratch the wood, just like Greg said, see if it's green. You're not going to need to go far down. You could do it with a fingernail. You could do it with certainly a little pocket knife or a pair of pruners.
And we're looking at maybe another 10 days at the most. We need some heat. Not that I want it, but we need some heat to wake things up this last round. And we're going to get some 80s, I think, next week. So that will start us on our way to knowing. I would say maybe by the 10th of June, you ought to pretty much have an answer.
Linda, we got to take a break here, but thank you very much for the call. Fred Breglia is here. Greg Ward is here. Yours truly, Ray Graff. More with the Gardening Vox Pop coming up.
Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting the exhibition of Time in the Mohawk River, featuring artwork depicting the Mohawk River and Erie Canal from the 19th to 21st centuries. ArkellMuseum.org. Interim Healthcare, providing companions, aides, and nurses in the home 2 to 24 hours a day so you or a loved one can stay in your home. Supporting the Mohawk Hudson Land Conservancy. InterimHealthcare.com. Edward Garbasik, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts. Providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. The Honest Wade Food Co-op, located at 100 Watervliet Ave in Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, specialty foods, and more. HonestWade.coop. And GLSEN, New York Capital Region and the Gay and Lesbian and Straight Education Network, hosting an annual gala June 13th at the Lake House with a Breakfast at Tiffany's theme. GLSENGALA.org.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, the gardening show. In fact, the second to last Vox Pop until the big fun drive, which is June 2nd. That's Monday, 6 a.m. I hope you're with us. Greg Ward is here, Fred Breglia, and you on the phone. Kathleen in the Berkshires, you're next.
Hi, yes. I have a large yellow maple tree. I'm guessing it's like 60 years old. That's on the side of the driveway, and the roots. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
I'm listening intently.
Yes,
the roots are actually like in the driveway now, either it's spread out, and I tried to protect it over the winter, but of course it got whacked a few times with a plow. Should I cover it?
Cover the roots is your question?
Yeah, that one that's wrapped around.
All right, wrapped around a trunk, wrapped around a driveway.
It's protrudes into the driveway.
Okay, so it's like almost a snowplow is hitting it and things like that.
Yeah.
All right. So
and the driveway's limited, but I try to get everything over more to the other side. But
right. If
two people park in the driveway and then someone else behind that one, especially in the winter, it gets covered with snow. It's actually raised up. If I had the driveway leveled, maybe, but the driveway's on a slant, so as a result, the dirt has like washed away. And I know you've always said never to cover them the way a lot of people do with mulch and stuff.
Well, that is partially true. First off, what is that driveway made out of?
It's just gravel.
Like a gravel driveway. Okay.
Yeah, I've never had it.
So like a crushed stone type of deal. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You could add up to about 3 inches of crushed material on top of that root system.
Okay.
So partially.
And then put a flag or something.
Yeah, you really just, the key is there's an air exchange process, without getting into a long technical answer, which mm-hmm. we don't have time for. An air exchange process is occurring with that root system, and air needs to go in and air needs to come out. Specifically, it's actually sucking in oxygen. It's kind of reversal of photosynthesis, and then it releases mm-hmm. carbon dioxide, secretes out, and needs to get it into the atmosphere. It needs to get out of the root zone. And by adding too much material, you know, too deep, 6 inches of mulch, it starts to affect that air exchange
okay.
process, and then
all
that
right.
becomes
so that's
a bad
the reason
thing.
Not to build it up too high.
That's right. And then also around the actual trunk area where you can see the flare of the trunk meeting the roots,
yeah.
that part would receive zero mulch, no mulch
okay.
up on the trunk flare. But
okay.
the actual feeder roots or the roots, structural roots away from that trunk
yep.
flare,
yep.
you could go up to
I'm
about 3 inches.
I'm looking at them right now.
Yep, you could add up to 3 inches of that same crushed material, and it certainly would be better for the tree than the snowplow taking new chunks out every year.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. No, you're right. Now it's getting really big. I'm thinking someday it may have to come down, but I mean it's so beautiful. I love it so much. But
well, you could do as long as you got the right person doing the job. You could certainly do what we would call a crown reduction, which would be a way to make a really big tree smaller. It's the same technique that would be used to make a shrub that's too big in your landscape smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But the key with crown reductions, you can make them skinnier, you can make them shorter, is definitely a skilled person that knows how to do reduction cuts. This is not the same thing as topping, where you come in and just chop branches off, which would be really bad for your tree. So
yeah.
When it comes
yeah.
to doing that, I would seek out a certified arborist in your area, and you could
okay.
do that by going to a great free resource put out by the International Society of Arboriculture called treesaregood.com. You can also find a link to that site from our Arboretum website, which is
okay.
www.landisarboretum.com. .org. And we have a link to that on our site as well.
Kathleen, thank you very much. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Vonnie in West Stockbridge. You're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am calling about a couple of viburnums that I've had for several years. I got them as seedlings from the Extension Service, and they're not looking great. There's wilt on the leaves, particularly on one of them. The wilt has not attacked every single one of the leaves, but it's not looking good. And that particular one does not have as many flowers as the other. I read that the soil is infected, and at this point, the best treatment is transplanting the whole tree. However, it's over 6 feet. It could be done. But what do you recommend?
Well, without seeing it,
yeah.
I don't know that I would recommend anything. If it's a soil-borne fungus, then transplanting it's not going to make a difference. You're going to bring it with you.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not sure that would work. If you want to take a sample and run it down the road a bit,
okay.
I wouldn't mind taking a look.
All right.
You know, so yeah.
Just of the leaf, then?
The whole stem. I would love a stem with some good leaves and some bad leaves
mm-hmm.
on it.
Do you think it could be this verticillium wilt?
Viburnums are susceptible to verticillium. It's pretty uncommon, but not impossible. It could
okay.
be. Yep.
I have seen more verticillium wilt this year on both maples and some other plants as well.
Uh-huh.
So it is around this year. Maybe the conditions are a little more moist this year, so it's
yeah.
maybe favoring
it. It's been
it.
There for a couple of years,
yeah.
I must say, and I haven't done anything about it, and it hasn't gotten any better. It's a little worse.
Are you losing whole branches every year?
No.
Yeah,
no, it seems to keep growing.
Yeah.
But it just looks kind of sad.
And it just started this year?
No, it started a couple of years ago.
It started a few years ago.
And it's worse this year. And
okay.
one tree that didn't have it last year has begun to get it.
Okay.
But it's far
okay.
away from the other one. You know, in quite a different area of the garden. It's probably 6 feet away, and the plants in between are fine.
Yeah, I mean, it if it's, you know, if these are going to fail, then removing them would be the key to sort of saving the ones that are farther away.
Uh-huh.
But,
and you wouldn't want to replace, if it is indeed a verticillium wilt, whatever the host plant is, you don't want to put that same species back in that same site.
Yeah.
Because
okay.
that, if it is a soil-borne fungus, which is verticillium wilt, then
uh-huh.
you could, you know, if any new plant's going to get it too,
okay.
if it is that. So we
okay.
need to figure that out first.
If you want to drop off a sample?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay.
Could I ask a question about pruning?
Very quickly.
Okay, very quickly. I put in a dogwood 2 years ago, and it's taking time to take hold. But can I shape it now at the top? It has some shoots and branches that look pretty wild. And can I take off, should I take off the fairly good-sized branches at the bottom?
Do pruning now. This is not a bad time.
Okay.
And you just don't want to take off a lot of the plant all at once. You want to, you know, as we've said before, maybe 20%, 25% of the entire plant. No, don't go beyond that this season.
Should I wait for it to flower?
You do not have to wait for it to flower unless there are flower buds. If this is a, you said a Coosa dogwood?
Yep.
Yeah, unless there are flower buds on there, you know, that you know of and you want to view them, you do not need to wait, no.
Okay, great. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It is the Gardening Show on Vox Pop, 1-800-348-2551. Joe in Saratoga, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I have an English walnut tree in my backyard, and it has leaves on the bottom a little bit, but it's not really leafing out on top. I cut off some of the lower branches that I could reach with the pole, so it's probably 100 years old, this big tree. And the wood on the inside is green and fine, but it's just not pushing out any leaves right now.
And this looked fine last year? No signs of anything? It looked fine, completely fine?
Yeah, it was totally good last year. It had lots of leaves. I mean, it lost its leaves really early, but it does every year.
All right.
So.
And so you got the top half that's not leafing out. And you said you scratched the wood and it's green?
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge tree, so I can only get to maybe, you know, the height of a pole saw. But
But the stuff that
high up, it looked, the wood looks totally fine.
Okay.
Except maybe at the very, very tips, but I don't know if it just hasn't gotten out to that, you know, the sap has flown out to the tips yet, but at least at the base of the branches, all the wood looks good.
All right. It sounds like it may be winter injury, which is not surprising on certain species. This year, again, being a big one, we've had a lot of that. It also may be something that's kind of underlying for some time. And a lot of times people say, oh, that, you know, it looked fine. But it did show these little subtle signs of things. And then all of a sudden, boom, it doesn't leaf out. So there may be another underlying stressor there involved with that as well. It could be something with like a girdling root. Make sure you see a real good trunk flare. Place where the roots and the trunk meet, you should see a really good flare zone there.
Yeah, it's definitely, and I've dug that out, man.
Okay, all right.
Checked it out. Looks like it's in pretty good shape.
Sounds maybe more like winter injury, but you have anything to add to that, Greg?
No, how cold has it been in Saratoga? And
it was pretty cold, and there was a deep.
Are the oaks?
It was like we had a lot of rain that froze, so you had a really deep freeze.
You know, are the other trees out now? All the other trees are leafed out very well.
Like yeah, maples, no, I'm worried.
Oaks
yeah, I know it always comes out really, really late, but I don't think it's ever come out this late.
Yeah, the fact that the wood's still green is a good sign. Because sometimes what happens with winter injury is, first problem with winter injury is it burns off a lot of the flower buds, which are usually not as, and this wouldn't be the case with this oak or this walnut, but with a lot of flowering plants, flower buds are the first to go, and then if it gets cold enough long enough, then the foliage buds start to go, and then the last part is that the branch actually will go. And in this case, if the leaves or the branches are still green, then the plant has still an ability to push out new growth from those branches. So I would definitely not do anything yet. Wait. And I know over at the Arboretum and Esperance, things are behind right now. Like a lot of our oak trees are definitely behind normal, and things like Kentucky coffee tree hasn't even showed any sign of life. I mean, they look dead, but they're definitely not, and they will be coming. So things are late. So maybe maybe it's just a matter of waiting a little while. And that's what I would recommend. Just wait a little while and see.
Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Should I try and cut back any of the dead stuff or just leave it?
Well, dead wood, as long as you know it's dead, you know, and that as you scratch it, it's brown. Anything that's dead can be removed any time of year.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yep. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You got it.
Thanks, Joe. Michael in Great Barrington. Michael, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have a tick problem in our yard and want to use diatomaceous earth, which we're told is fine for pets. Fine for chickens, but what we want to know before we use it is whether there's any chance that it'll harm our local wild birds if we put it down.
Okay.
Hmm. I don't believe that it would. I would say the only hazard to diatomaceous earth is inhaling it. You personally, when you're applying it, you know, it's a little silica dust there, so you just want to be careful when you're applying it. But, you know, once it's down, it's not going to hurt anything but insects.
Okay, great. And can I ask a quick bishop weed question while I have
you? Sure you can.
Yeah.
Great. We just have a horrible infestation of bishop weed everywhere and, you know, gone in the gardens and so on. We don't want to use Roundup. We dig it out where we can. We pull or burn it where we have to. Are there any other organic gardening techniques?
You know, if you could get in there and mow it regularly, regular mowing of it would actually do a lot of it for you. If you could mow it low regularly, keep it mowed.
It can't take any real pressure, and so mowing obviously is a nice convenient way to do it. But if it's in your vegetable garden and you till your vegetable garden every year, you do the till method, that really makes it inconvenient for that weed. And then if it's in your you know, any garden where you're emptying the whole garden every year, like a vegetable garden, annual bed, you should be able to get it out of there. It really only becomes a serious problem when it's in a established perennial bed where it mixes with other root systems, and then it becomes tricky. And, you know, short of taking up everything, transplanting, starting over, the only other, you know, herbicidal product you could consider is trying some of the vinegar-based you know, post-emergent herbicides, and you just have to be careful because if you're working around plants you like, you could hurt them.
Okay.
Yep. Also, smothering it. If you could, you know, again, if it's in an area where you can just cover it with something, even a piece of old sheet metal in areas like at our own house, we had this old sheet metal. We'd lay it down in areas where, because I have a problem with that as well, and it smothers quite easily too.
Okay. Michael, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Margaret in Kingston. Margaret, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a lot of problems with my, I have a very big garden. I have rhododendron, andromeda, lots of pachycandra, lots of periwinkle, what have you. So someone said, you really need to go and get some coffee grounds. So I went over to Starbucks, and it's not unusual that you can go there. They're very kind, and you can walk home with a 5-gallon drum of all those little discs of coffee grounds. And so I started working it around all my plants, and it worked out really well. Things got greener, bigger, better. But my grass started looking terrible. So I said, well, maybe I should put it on the lawn. Well, that was a mistake. I put it on the lawn, and I got night crawlers. Night crawlers so big, they had that white ring around them.
Wow.
And then it left this scat, like their droppings. So every morning I would wake up, there'd be these little piles of, like, little balls.
Yep. Night crawler.
Wow.
All pieces. Over my whole yard.
When I was 8, that was like heaven. We would be out there at, you know, with a flashlight at, you know, dusk, and we would be pulling those guys because we were going fishing tomorrow.
Sure.
Me too.
So I think you just need some 8-year-olds.
I didn't get any grass. All I got was this black, sticky.
Well, yeah, what you did was add sort of this composting material to the top of the soil. It probably provided a nice little habitat for the night crawlers. But more importantly, usually what coffee grounds are doing besides leaving some nitrogen behind is dropping the pH a little bit. They're acidifying. And the lawn, most of the time, doesn't like that. It depends on your pH, of course. But, I would definitely say don't put it on the lawn.
Right.
You can, if your lawn needs building up and you would use a complete compost, would it keep the night crawlers away? I couldn't say.
What do you feel about coffee grounds? Do you think it really works against keeping slugs away and all that kind of thing?
Not sure about slugs. I do think it's a great way to sort of organically acidify an area. I often recommend it on citrus trees in containers.
It's also really quite good in your compost pile as part of a complete compost package.
Oh.
You put it in, it breaks down, it rots, and it's not acidifying in the sense that if you're putting on a really good mix of compost materials together, it's just a really good component, like eggshells and things like that.
Some people this year are recommending that we take the coffee grounds and dilute them in water, then strain them and take that water and spray it on our hosta, because that will stop the slugs from eating the hosta. How do you feel about that?
I would use... I don't know if I would use that.
Margaret, I'm afraid we're out of time here.
Okay.
But thank you. That was a most interesting call. And thanks to Fred Breglia and Greg Ward. I appreciate you guys coming in. Support comes from Washington County Tourism, announcing music, museums, arts, nature, wine, opera theaters, farmers markets, and more. WashingtonNYCounty.com. Berkshire International Film Festival now through June 1st. May in the summer, Battered Bastards of Baseball. Trip to Italy, plus 75 films and events, BIFFMA.org. Fleet Feet Sports Colony in Malta, New York, locally owned specialty run shops featuring footwear, apparel, and training programs for all distances, all abilities, FleetFeetAlbany.com. At Metroland, an alternative news weekly serving New York's Capital Region and Western Massachusetts. Thanks to Fred and Greg and to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Anonymous Sandy for answering the calls. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Food Friday, and a very interesting one indeed. Be with us.